KPCW News Time 8:29. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, it's going to be a busy summer at Swanner Nature Center in the studio with a rundown of some of the fun programs this summer, as well as an update on some of the land management conservation efforts. I have the director of the preserve and co-host of the Screen Earth on KPCW, Neil Larson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's just start with really kind of your purpose, and that is the really the land management conservation efforts of the Swanner Nature Preserve. What are you guys working on there?
Yeah, that has always been kind of a core piece of what we do. So this time of year, as you can probably guess, we're full throttle when it comes to land restoration and management. You know, we do, while a lot of our monitoring takes place in the fall, we do have some spring monitoring as well. So we're looking at water quality pretty carefully. We're watching some of our stream restoration projects to see how they perform. But we're also really focused on noxious weeds at this time of year, because this is when they are popping up and flowering. We use a handful of different techniques in an effort to kind of minimize herbicide use, which can have its own set of issues. So in addition to that, we do a lot of weed pulling. We do some cutting. We are, of course, always grateful to the volunteers that help with that. And then we also are working with some biocontrols, one of which is brand new this year. And we were able to get this through the state of Colorado in a partnership with their department of ag. And so essentially this is a rust fungus, Puccinia punctiformis, that is a natural predator, you could say, of Canada thistle. And Canada thistle, I think, is one of the most, most hated weeds in this town, because it is so persistent and it's so widespread and it's really tough to get rid of. Canada thistle has so much root mass below the surface that when you're just treating what's on the surface, it doesn't always kill the plant. The great thing about this rust fungus that Colorado has found is that it hits the roots by overwintering in the roots. So come fall, it kind of retreats to the roots of the plant and it systemically infects all of those, you know, interconnected Canada thistles. And they've had really good luck using this technique to manage Canada thistle. We've tried other biocontrols here in the past, weevil and things along those lines, without great success. So
it gets sprayed on in the fall, is that what you say, onto the flower, the pretty flower?
Yeah, I know, beautiful flowers. It kind of gets sprinkled onto the leaves. You sprinkle on this little mixture of dried plant with the rust fungus and give it a little spray from a water spray bottle to help it attach and kind of activate. And then you wait until the next spring to see how it's doing. Stay tuned. The results are not yet in this spring. In addition to our site, the folks from the Colorado Insectary worked with a few other sites. And so we're all kind of waiting and hoping that it took last winter and that we'll see some signs of it pretty soon.
Yeah. What are some of the other weed issues that you've got there?
You know, probably the most visible is Dyer's woad. I think a lot of people have learned to recognize this plant around town. It has this beautiful yellow umbrella-shaped crown of flowers, and it grows, you know, it can be 3 feet tall. And that's a plant that, gosh, we've been battling for years, a huge infestation. And so we are, you know, slowly but surely chipping away at that. I think sometimes people think once you see the flower, it's too late, whether that's on the preserve or somewhere else in town. And the good news is you can still pull that. You can still cut off the flowering head or the seed head because it's just a biennial. Or in some cases, if you want to, you can still spray and it won't create viable seeds. So there are still some options if you see this around town or in your backyard or wherever. You can definitely keep at it this time of year.
Well, I think you used to pay people, too, to collect garlic mustard.
We used to be able to get a grant through the University of Montana's weed management program that would enable us to put out a bounty for Dyer's woad and some other species. And if people pulled, you know, a certain amount, they'd get paid per pound, which was an awesome program. But we haven't been able to fund that in recent years. So now we're just hoping people are willing to help out of the goodness of their hearts.
So, I mean, do you have signups for that in terms of people offering to come do that? On a regular basis, or
we do. We this spring have actually primarily been working with groups that come to us with, say, 30 people and want an activity altogether. But you will see some public signups, and if you're interested, please just contact us, and we will fit you right in the schedule.
Okay, and then when you talked a little bit about water, we've already seen what a dry winter, now spring, it's been. What does that mean for what you do there at the preserve?
So it means that we have to be really watchful this summer with East Canyon Creek. So East Canyon Creek, because the water rights in it are over-allocated within our basin here, they're sort of over-assigned, it means that it can dry up completely, and that's completely with, you know, completely legal. However, sometimes some of our, sort of community-minded water users in times of need will shut down their pumps or put their water back in the stream to help keep the stream running. That's definitely something that we will be looking at this late summer and fall. The levels are already pretty low. The wetlands are probably drier than I've ever seen them. And it's something we just have to be mindful about in the long run. Some of the restoration work that we do also targets this flow issue and climate change. And the idea is that these structures, beaver dam analogs, which I referenced earlier, they help keep the water in the stream longer, and they help it store more water in the soil around it that almost acts as like a reservoir to release back into the stream later in the year. So none of those things are a silver bullet, but hopefully between you know, the generosity of some of our partners that have water rights and forego those maybe for a few days a year, and some of those restoration efforts, we certainly hope to keep water in East Canyon Creek. That's something the Watershed Committee is looking at closely, along with the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District.
Yeah. So you've got users above the wetlands and then also below. I mean, once it leaves the preserve, then we're starting to talk about just the habitat within the stream itself.
Yeah, exactly. There's, probably another mile, that's a rough estimate, below the preserve before you get to the outflow, the effluent from the Water Reclamation District. And that piece just upstream of the Reclamation District is always the area that's most likely to go dry, because we always have this treated water re-entering the stream down at Jeremy at the water treatment plant. And that is pretty clean water. So that's good water to have in the stream.
All right. So earlier this spring, you had the Sandhill Cranes back and with your cameras watched the hatches, huh?
We did. As usual, the webcam was a big hit. And I'm sure some of you followed that on social media. This pair of cranes has come back and nested in the same pond every year since 2008 when the Eco Center was built, and generally rear one or two colts each spring.
Yeah. How do you know it's the same couple?
You know, that's an interesting point. They aren't tagged or banded in any way, so it's a guess. But sandhill cranes are monogamous, so the same pair stays together every year, and they nest in the same place every year. So we just kind of anticipate at this point that it is the same pair. If it were a different pair, I would guess they would kind of be in a slightly different location. You know, they might be 20 feet to the left or right kind of thing.
Yeah. And you have more than two sandhill cranes and their babies there, yeah?
Yeah, we generally have about seven nesting pairs. And they each generally, as sandhill cranes do, lay two eggs, have two colts, and usually one colt survives. That's kind of an average, you know, just in general for the species. They tend to put their resources into one of their young. They're so much fun to watch, though. And this year there are a few pairs that have two colts that are grown into, I guess you would call it, adolescence at this point. So definitely keep your eye out as you're driving along the frontage road, or if you stop by the center, you can get a good view from the tower.
Okay, let's talk about some of the events that you've got coming up this summer, this week. Well, you've been doing this, I think, on a pretty regular basis. You're offering yoga on the pier there that kind of overlooks the preserve?
We are. Yeah, yoga is a new one for us this year. And the first class was so popular that we kind of got the message we should keep it going. And that's in the exhibit hall if it's too hot or too cold outside, and it's outside if the weather is nice. And one of our full-time staff members is actually also yoga instructor, Natalie McHale, and she leads those courses.
Okay, really cool. So people can just go on and register. I think it's like, what, 10 bucks a class or something?
Yeah, you can. And at this point, you can still show up for the yoga as well. There's been plenty of space.
Okay. You also have coming up the Avian Adventures. These are with birders Kenny Frisch. Tell me about that.
The Avian Adventures is a series of birding tours that we're doing each summer, starting in the early spring and running through the summer. So you get to see different phases of local birds and migratory birds. And these are limited to small groups, so there will only be 12 people in your group. Each person that joins gets our swan or bird list. And then also we have binoculars for everyone that needs them. And then there's also a couple of spotting scopes that go out with each group, which give you an incredible incredible view of the birds, even from a pretty large distance.
So what will people see besides magpies?
Besides magpies and sandhill cranes. So out on the wetlands, you tend to see migratory wetland birds, and some of those even nest here for the summer. So you may see, plovers. You'll see a lot of waterfowl. Some of the birds that you might expect to see down at the Great Salt Lake wetlands, you actually can see up here, you know, at altitude in Park City, which is kind of neat.
Okay. Again, people can register for that online.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we only have a few spots left in that one, so act fast.
Okay. Also, you have, and you've offered this before, it's the Utah Master Naturalist Watershed Investigation Course. It's a $225 fee, and it's at what, a college course?
Yeah, it's a 40-hour course. You can get college credit for it if you'd like, or continuing education units if you'd like those. Or you can just do it for fun, which is in our experience why most people take it. They're just curious about the world around them. In the past years, this 40-hour course has been over 5 days, a Monday through a Friday. And we realized that that limits who can take the class. People like us would not, you know, really be able to take it. So the guy who runs the class has now started offering a new format where you can do 16 of those hours online at your own pace before the class starts. So there are only 3 days of in-person field trips and instruction. And those will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, June 22nd through 24th. And on those days, you start kind of with the alpine lakes and streams at the top of the watershed, work your way down, and the last day will be at the Great Salt Lake, where you learn about the bottom of our watershed here.
Wow, fascinating.
It's a wonderful class.
Yeah. Let's see. Coming up June 23rd, you've got the sleepover at the Swanner. Is this are parents required?
Parents are required. There is one chaperone required per each per four children. So you can combine, you know, family groups or things like that. It's for kids ages 5 to 12. There will be a nature at night walk out on the preserve where you learn about what's happening at night. You know, marshmallow roasting, s'more making, a craft, a variety of activities to kind of keep everyone busy until it's time to go to sleep. You can sleep inside in the exhibit hall or out on the deck as you prefer under the stars. And then in the morning, there will be a quick breakfast before people head off for the day. This is a new one for us. We're excited to see how it works out.
Okay. Coming up Thursday, the 28th of June, the Wasatch Wildflower Walk. And you meet at the Swanner, and then you're going to be shuttling up to Guardsman?
Yeah, we'll kind of be in an area between Empire and Guardsman's. The gentlemen that are teaching this, Richard Anderson and Jerry Goodspeed, are actually the authors of my favorite flower identification book, I think it's called Wildflowers of the Wasatch. And they're just incredibly, they have like an encyclopedic knowledge of these wildflowers. So they're a lot of fun to go out into the field with. And again, this is a small group tour.
Okay. Again, people can register online, and members
yes.
always get a discount.
Absolutely. Members always get a discount. And we just urge people to register online as soon as you can. These things tend to fill up in the summer.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No? You know, I did want to mention that our summer camps fill up really quickly. I think most people know that they were sold out. But this is the time of year when people start to firm up their summer plans, things change, and they may pull a child out of the camp. And so it is worth putting yourself on a wait list or checking on the Eventbrite page to see if there are openings. We even have, I think, two openings in our very first week of camp now, which is for first and second graders starting on the 18th. So you may still have a chance to get into camp if you're interested in that.
Okay. SwanerNaturePreserve.org.
Swanner, yes, or SwanerEcoCenter.org. Either one.
Okay. No, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Park City Education Foundation wrapping up another successful year, raising more than $1 million for the numerous programs it offers. In the studio, I have Executive Director Abby McNulty. Joining her, Brett Hughes, the Assistant Director of Bands at Park City High School and Treasure Mountain Junior High School. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Abby, as I mentioned, the Ed Foundation raising more than $1 million. This is like the sixth year in a row.
Yep, that's right.
So what's your goal for the coming year?
To maintain our support of Park City School District programs. And we support about 100 programs, pre-K to post-high school, a mentor program for first-generation students. And we want to continue to be able to do that.
All right. And again, that's done through a number of different ways, huh?
Yep, but largely through individuals who make contributions to support education here in Park City.
What you say is that you believe that every student in the district is impacted somehow.
Yep.
How do you know that?
Well, we take a look at the number of programs we offer and the different grades that they're offered and the different schools that they're offered. And we can say that a PCF program impacts every single kid in the district.
Oh, you had another successful running with that. Again, that's a big component of the funds here.
It is. Yep. So you asked just a minute ago. We raise our funds through events, through Red Apple Gala and Running with Ed, and individual contributions through Parent Appeal and through our Scholar Circle program and some foundation gifts. Running with Ed is our anchor event in the spring, and we had about 1,400 runners this year, the biggest we've ever had. We had 25% of our teachers running this year, which was so fun, and we had more kids than ever running before, and I brought my kids along this year, and we ran the whole event together, and every time we stopped at an exchange, they'd say, oh, there's Mrs. So-and-so, there's Mr. So-and-so, oh my gosh, I have to go say hi. It was super cute. It's a really fun event, just a great celebration, I think a great way to end the year. Everyone comes together to cheer on, you know, our students, our teachers, and our runners. It's really fun.
So while you had more runners, did you add more money as well?
We had about the same that we raised the previous year. We actually reduced the costs for students this year. So we had more students running, but it's basically there's no money earned on our student entry fees.
Sure. Okay. Also, you wanted to mention some of the great success stories that you've had come out of Park City High School this year.
Yeah. Well, we have some amazing success stories. Park City High School, as we all know, is just a shining light in the state and all the amazing things that students accomplish with support of their teachers. And we wanted to say that the debate and the Future Business Leaders of America program that is supported by the Ed Foundation is going to nationals this summer. The robotics program, also supported by the Ed Foundation, placed in the top 25 at the World's competition. We also have six graduating LIA students, seniors, who received an Amelia Brink Scholarship, which is funded through the Ed Foundation. And each one is going to a four-year college, the U, Utah State, and Westminster, which is incredibly exciting.
Again, that's the Latino in Action students?
Yes, that's right. LIA is Latinos in Action. It's a leadership program for Latino students at the high school.
Okay. And the Ed Foundation also helps support some of the music programs?
Yep, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
All right. So how maybe, Brett, you can talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So you know, the Ed Foundation has been great to everybody in the district, but from my perspective, the reason they're so good to us is what makes our music program so unique in Park City is we offer so much more than just band and orchestra. And the school district is incredibly supportive of our music program, but we continue to offer a bigger product and more opportunities for the students. And the Ed Foundation has been able to step in and help out with that. So we've done things in the last 5 years, like we've commissioned a composer to write music specifically for our percussion ensemble that the Education Foundation helped with. We bought steel drums to introduce, you know, the only instrument invented in the 20th century to our students. And the Ed Foundation financed that. And so, and then they've always been supportive of the marching band, which, again, these are all projects that are necessary to a music program to succeed at the level we do, but are not necessarily a base music program. And so the school district does what they can to support our base music program, and then the Education Foundation really helps us to offer a extended product beyond that.
So you're going to get some help for next summer, because the marching band has been invited to play for the 75th anniversary celebration of D-Day.
So exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, as a matter of fact, marching band started today. Today is the first day of the 2018-2019 marching band. And they are. They're preparing to move to go to France next year on June 6th. And the Ed Foundation has already said, you know, yes, we will figure out ways that we can help you in marketing and in promotion and financially where it fits and things like that. And so, yeah, we're really excited to be able to take the message of Park City and our support of our service members like we did in Hawaii in 2016 for Pearl Harbor and take it to D-Day in 2019. And
yeah. Now, is that something you have to apply for, or is that it's an invitation?
Both. Mm-hmm. And so we had to apply to be invited. And our invitation to the D-Day parade was actually based on our commitment and our participation in Hawaii in 2016. So we applied for the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor parade that we went to in 2016. And then based on that performance and based on how our kids acted in Hawaii and the respect our students showed at Pearl Harbor, we actually came home and had an invitation waiting for us when we got home from Hawaii to go to France. They actually wanted us there this year, and we said, we're going to need at least one more year to do some fundraising and make sure we can make it fit. So we're going to go in 2019 instead.
Yeah, certainly music programs are considered electives in the school district.
Yeah, very much so.
And yet, but you would certainly make the argument about the educational and academic importance of them.
Yeah, every single day. And not only for our high-achieving students, not our mainstream students, even our special education students benefit from participation in music programs. There's so much research out there about beat presence and the concept of engaging in repetition and just what music does within your brain to cross hemispheres and really make some connections for students. It helps them in all walks of life. And, you know, as music teachers, we like to think that we're not actually teaching music. We're teaching life skills. We're just using music as the vehicle to do it. And so, yeah, I absolutely believe that every student benefits from music. And, you know, Park City School District is great in that they do require every student in the elementary schools to be in general music K through 5. And then they do require every student in sixth grade to take either band, orchestra, or choir. Once we get to seventh grade, it becomes an elective. But at that point, students have been exposed to it pretty well, and most of the students understand the benefits by that point because we have such phenomenal staff members at our elementary schools and at Ecker Hill.
And it's really just a commitment of their time. You would make an instrument available if somebody didn't have one?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is, in the band and the orchestra program, students are required to have instruments. And a lot of families in this city are able to provide an instrument for their student, but there's some who aren't. And so the district does own instruments, and we do have a rental program that students can participate in for a very low cost. But, yeah, we absolutely, students who are on fee waivers or students who just have a need and aren't on fee waivers, if they come to us and say, hey, I want to be in the band, but I can't afford an instrument, we will find a way to put an instrument in their hand. We don't believe at all in denying a student access to a music education because of a lack of an instrument.
Right. Quickly, Abby, you wanted to give an update with regard to the Men for Ed grant?
Yeah, so this was our first year of awarding a Men for Ed grant, and Men for Ed is a group of the Park City Education Foundation. It's men and dads in this community who've given $1,000 one time. We've raised about $120,000 with this group, and our first grants were given away, which included a grant to the marching band for new uniforms. And it's to support activities that happen outside of the classroom but are also tied and part of Park City School District. So we supported some running clubs and some media clubs and some activities that wouldn't otherwise have any opportunity for funding.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Brett and Abby, thanks for coming in this morning.
Hey, thank you. Matt.
Well, summer officially began at the Utah Olympic Park May 25th in the studio with a look ahead at some of the events and programs taking place this summer. I have Marketing Manager Cole Nordman. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So I guess the big thing is that you offer kind of the Summer Fun Pass with the gold passes, and those are still available?
Yeah, that's the best way to see the entirety of what we offer at the park. You can do almost every activity right now. The Alpine slide is down due to maintenance. Everything else is included in that pass besides the bobsled and zipline tour.
Okay. And those are just excluded because of the time, the length of...
They're a little more expensive. They take a little more time to do. You can certainly add those to a gold pass for $25. It's a fairly cheap way to add those activities on. Summer bobsled, $75. And the zipline tour, which is going to be opening up in a few weeks here, will be $60.
All right. And you sell a lot of these gold passes? I mean, is it just an opportunity for kids just to, it's kind of like the Disneyland pass, huh?
It really is. It's our highest selling product during the summer. Like I said, it's the best way to experience the park because we have so many different activities. If you were to pay for all of those a la carte, they'd be much more expensive. But coming in to do just the gold pass activities throughout the day is honestly the best way to see the park and to get unlimited rides on all of those activities for the entire day.
Okay, so you've got rope courses out there. What else?
We've got rope courses, like I said, the Alpine slide. That'll be coming online here shortly as well once the maintenance is done on it. We've got the extreme zip line, freestyle zip line, and we've actually got two new activities this year, which will be the zip line tour, as I mentioned. But we also have a new activity called our airbag jump, which we built three different platforms at 5, 10, and 15 feet above the ground. And we have giant airbags that you jump into like a stunt person in the movies. Really, really cool stuff.
Okay. You also have extreme tubing. Tell me about that.
Extreme tubing is probably our most beloved activity at the park. We put you on an inner tube just like you would go tubing at Soldier Hollow during the winter months. And we send you down the landing hills of our Nordic ski jumps.
And again, that's included in the gold pass?
That's absolutely included in the gold pass. So if you wanted to come to the park, you get a gold pass, and you want to do extreme tubing 15 times, you can do it 15 times in a day. That's the great part about the gold pass. And on it, it's 50 miles an hour on an inner tube when you go down the K90 landing hill. It's exhilarating.
All right. And there's kind of a... You require people that are just doing the one-time thing to start at the smaller hill and then build up?
That's a really great point. So if you were to come in and you just buy an extreme tubing pass, we do ask that you start on the K64 hill. It's just a primer for you because once you get up to the K90 and you're standing on the crest of that landing hill, it's quite the sight. You can't really see the outrun because the steepness of the hill. But once you get on the tube and you've experienced it on the 64, you can't wait to try the 90.
Okay. And then you also offer rock climbing, and this is on the same wall that you use for the professional Seco Block?
Yeah. So the Seco Block wall should be being constructed here in just a few weeks as well. We're going to start construction on that, and that will be part of the Gold Pass as well once we do get it erected for the summer. It's a great way to come out and kind of cool off during the day. So if you've done too many activities, you got a little too hot, and you need to cool off, the pool isn't heated. So during the summer months, it hovers right around 60 degrees, 65 degrees. So it's the perfect way to cool down over a lunchtime or something like that when you're getting a little too hot doing our activities, and you can come out and climb up the wall as far as you can. You can climb some of the same routes that they do in Seco Block if you can manage to grapple with those. But it's a really, really fun way to cool down at the park.
Okay. And then the Flying Ace All-Stars Freestyle Show returning not till June 23rd.
Yes. On June 23rd, it'll coincide with Olympic Day, actually. So that's our biggest family-friendly activity that we do at the park every summer. We kind of want to do it a little bit differently this year, just with everything going on with the OEC and all the talk of the Olympics potentially coming back to Salt Lake and the Utah area. We want to make sure that that's a really great experience for everyone this summer. So the first freestyle show of the year will be on June 23rd at 1 p.m. And before that, from 11 to 1 p.m., we'll have face painting, bouncy houses, all the family activities, some crafts. We'll have Olympians from noon to 1 p.m. signing autographs, both former and current Olympians. So it's a great, like I said, family event for everyone to come and check out. It's free to the public. The only thing you would have to pay for that day is the freestyle show.
Okay. And then, of course, you've got the Alfheng and Ski Museum and Salt Lake Olympic Winter Games Museum that's open daily as well.
Yeah, those are open daily, 9 to 6, completely free to the public. You can come in, check those out, see some of the memorabilia from the 2002 Games. And every day you can come out and watch athletes train in our pool for free.
Right. Again, people can just go to UtahOlympicLegacy.org for the complete rundown.
That's the best way to find out all the information. And when you go on there and you look at gold passes, you can get an automatic 10% off if you book your gold pass online.
Okay. Hey, Cole, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.